Well, good morning, everyone. If I haven't met you, my name is Nate, and I'm so happy you came to church. I love that there's a room full of people who are hungry to learn and hungry to worship. And I know that we're in different places in our journey. Some of us are a little unresolved. We're not sure what we believe, but just to be here even, that's a big step, especially with a little bit of foul weather. I have two brothers that pastor churches over in the Seattle area, and both of them canceled their services last weekend because there was snow. And they said, "Do you guys ever do that?" I said, "No." You just, like, if you canceled because of snow, we wouldn't meet for all of January and February or something like that. So we just keep going. We are in a series we're calling Practices. And what this is really about is just this key idea, is that when Jesus came to planet Earth, he wasn't just looking for adherents, meaning people who agreed with him, said, "Yeah, I believe the truth of what you're saying." He was looking for something more than adherence. He was looking for disciples. And disciples is not a word that we use in our language very often, but it was an ancient form of teaching. This is actually how people learned almost any trade in the first century, is you followed a teacher. So in this instance, it would be a rabbi in the Jewish world, and a rabbi was a teacher, and it was a form of apprenticeship. So before we had colleges and training schools, how did you learn how to become a farrier or a blacksmith? Well, you went and you learned from an expert, and for years you followed them, and for years you learned the secrets of the trade until you had arrived at a level of competency yourself. So it's that same idea that Jesus is asking for apprentices, disciples, and he says this, to follow him, not just believe, not just make some sort of mental assent, but he says, follow me. And so many of us are doing this Practices Journal together. It's been a great experience for me. We are going to move in week five in this Practices Journal into something that's a little more challenging. It's a whole series of studies under the idea of sacrifice. So in these spiritual practices, there are these ancient principles that we read about, things like fasting, things like self-denial, things like withholding something from yourself in order to pursue God. And so in this concept of self-denial, I want to read from the same passage that Mark Johnson just referred to from Luke chapter 9. And so if you have a Bible, you can turn there. If not, we'll have it on the screens. Before we do that, though, I came across this quote as I was studying through this passage. And this is kind of I don't even know who this guy is, but I loved what he wrote. This quote says this, "Be aware of any teaching that minimizes the cross." Okay, we're going to talk today about this idea of the cross. And to us, 2,000 years after the life of Jesus, the cross is, it's essential and almost even a bit romantic. In the first century, the cross and for the Son of God to die on a cross was unthinkable. So be aware of any teaching that minimizes the cross, that merchandises the gospel. The gospel is the good news. This is what Jesus came to announce. That merchandises it, tries to sell it, tries to polish it up, and that appeals to the fleshly nature of man. This is not the way of the cross, nor is it the way of our Lord. So the passage that we're going to read, if you were on Jesus' team, so he had 12 original disciples, he'll call them apostles later, that had left something to follow him. They left some more fishermen. One of them was a tax collector. They had different businesses and opportunities. And Jesus said, "Follow me, be my disciple." And they left whatever. And momentum's building. I mean, you're talking about massive crowds. The Bible records that on multiple occasions, there were thousands of people present, in the 10 to 15 to 20,000 present. And Jesus would speak to them. Astounding, miraculous things would happen. People were just eager for this good news. Like, they just hadn't heard it. And then in the midst of this growing phenomena, Jesus says things that if you were part of Jesus' team, you'd be like, "Don't say that. That is not helping us at all." Because here's where you would have been if you're in the first century and you were one of the original disciples, you had been waiting along with your ancestors for thousands of years for someone that you called the Messiah. So Messiah is a Hebrew word. It's translated this way, the promised one or the anointed one. So here's the problem with being in first century Israel, is you're an occupied people group. The Romans have come in. And the problem is it wasn't just the Romans. You follow Jewish history back, and it's people group after people group after people group. They had not had political freedom very often. There were just a few years. They were in such a strategic place where their position, that every major world power had marched in and taken them over, taken their resources, taxed them heavily, sometimes taken them away into slavery. And now they're occupied by the most significant empire that's ever been on the planet Earth to this point. It's the Roman Empire. And they're taxed heavily. They're told what to do. They're told what to believe. Now they're being forced even to declare that Caesar is a god. This is just unthinkable for them. This is unthinkable. One of the problems is that Rome has come in, and next to their temple, the sacred place for the Hebrews, they've built a Roman garrison, and they've made sure that it's just a little bit taller, 3 feet taller than the temple. It's just this declaration, we are in charge. And so they're anxious, they're waiting every day of a Hebrew person's life. They're praying for the Messiah. And this is what they're anticipating, that when the promised one comes, he will reinvigorate the nation. He'll raise up an army. He'll overcome the occupying forces. He'll bring freedom back to the nation. He'll bring religious revival back to the nation. He'll bring economic prosperity back to the nation. They go way back in their history to their King David, who did exactly this, this moment in time when Israel was free and powerful and not threatened by enemies. And so they've been waiting and waiting and waiting and waiting and waiting for this Messiah. So their expectations are what? Freedom. We'll be strong once again. We'll be out from underneath the shadow of our oppressive enemies. So Jesus, this is the context right before we're going to read. Jesus says this. He looks at his disciples and he asks this question. Who do people say that I am? What's going on out there? When you interact with the crowds, what do people say about me? So Peter speaks up. He says, well, here's what we're hearing. Some say that you're John the Baptist. Okay, John the Baptist was actually Jesus' cousin, and he had started this new religious movement, but unfortunately, he had just been executed. He'd been beheaded, and so one of the things going around was the spirit of John the Baptist was now in Jesus, and that's why this is happening. He says, so some say you're John the Baptist. Some say you're Elijah. Elijah was one of the Old Testament prophets. You can read about him in the book of the Kings, and Elijah had this really unique ending to his life where he didn't experience a physical death. It's kind of like it's a Sunday school type story. It's just like, whoa, is that Elijah jumps into this flaming chariot and is carried away into heaven. And so because he had never physically died here on planet Earth, some Hebrew people believe that the spirit of Elijah will come back. And Elijah had all power to do these incredible things and to shake up the nation. So some people say you're John the Baptist. Some people say you're Elijah. Some people say you're one of the prophets of old, referring to two famous Old Testament prophets, Isaiah and Jeremiah. These people who came in and warned and said, this is what God says. And then Jesus asks another question. So he says, I hear what other people say. Because people have all different opinions on who Jesus is. Even globally, if we ask that question now, people all over the planet would go, well, I think he's this, I think he's that. Jesus says this, who do you say that I am? He personalizes the question. What about you? And this is the most fundamental and important question that I think every human being must deal with. Who do I say that Jesus is? So here's what Peter says in response to that question? He says, you are the Christ. You're the Messiah, the Son of the living God. I mean, and that's a big, big statement for a Hebrew to make. You're the promised one. You're not just a human. You're beyond that. You're the one that we have been praying for. He looks Jesus in the eyes and he says, you're the culmination of our prayers. You're the hope of our nation. You're the one who's going to restore what's been lost. You're the one who's going to win the victories that we've never been able to win. Big statement. Let's jump in and read what happens just after that conversation. Luke chapter 9. So after Peter says this, Jesus strictly warned them not to tell this to anyone. Now, if you were in charge of Jesus' PR campaign, wouldn't you want everyone to know, hey, Jesus is the Messiah. Crowds are going to get bigger. But Jesus says we've got competing agendas here. And he said, the Son of Man, that's referring to himself as another term for this Messiah. The Son of Man must, okay, is not optional. He is going to blow their perceptions of what the Messiah is going to do out of the water. The Son of Man must suffer many things and be rejected by the elders, the chief priests, and the teachers of the law. And he must be killed and on the third day be raised to life. And then he said to them all, whoever wants to be my disciple must deny themselves and take up their cross daily and follow me. For whoever wants to save their life will lose it, but whoever loses their life for me will save it. What good is it for someone to gain the whole world and yet lose or forfeit their very self, the essence of who they are? Whoever is ashamed of me and my words, the Son of Man will be ashamed of them when he comes in his glory and in the glory of the Father and of the holy angels. Who's Jesus? And then what is a disciple of Jesus? That's the question that Jesus answers. He says, if you want to be my disciple, here's what it is. Let's talk through this a little bit. Point number one is a radical reorientation of who the Messiah would be and what the Messiah would do. Okay, we talked about this, that there's this perception that when the Messiah finally showed up, he was going to ride in on a big white horse and he was going to raise an army and he was going to get rid of everything that's wrong in this world and he would be powerful and he would be a conqueror. And what does Jesus say about the Messiah? He says, actually, you declared that I'm the Messiah and here's what I can tell you about who I am. One, I must suffer many things. The conqueror must suffer? He says, yeah, I'm going to suffer many things. Secondly, I'm going to be rejected by the elders, the chief priests, and the teachers of the law. So this is rejection from the religious establishment. If this would have just been untenable. Wait a minute. The religious establishment is the group that keeps us hoping for the Messiah. You're talking about the people who study and interpret the Bible, those who lead us. There's no separation of church and state. This is the religious people who lead and interpret God's ancient text. And you're telling me this, that you're the Messiah, but the very people that we look to teach us are going to reject you? The Messiah would experience rejection. I'll suffer. I'll be rejected. And he says, and I'll be killed. The Messiah must be killed. This would have been preposterous. How could the one who would be our great deliverer be killed? That's unthinkable. How can you win a victory if you die? What are you talking about? Jesus is taking their perceptions of what the Messiah would do and just totally reorienting them. Then he has this little caveat, and this little caveat changes everything. We'll talk about this more. He says, the Messiah will be killed, but on the third day, he'll be raised to life. Now, you would have had to shake your head like, what do you mean? You're going to die and then be raised to life? Nobody's been raised to life, right? What is happening here? You ever heard the term competing agendas? They have competing agendas. Their expectations are here, and Jesus says this is reality. So if this is what the Messiah is going to do, Here's the next portion of the scripture that we need to study. It's, what does a disciple of Jesus look like? What does it mean to be a disciple of Jesus? Whoever wants to be my disciple, and Jesus says this, he's going to lay out these fundamental thoughts that are, all of them are challenging. He says, if you want to be my disciple, it begins this way. You must deny yourself. Deny themselves. See, there's always something to leave behind, isn't there? Anybody in the room just wonderful at self-denial? See, most of us are experts at self-edification and make me feel better, right? I want to experience something easy. Jesus says, if you actually want to be my disciple, you must deny yourself. Early in my training, this is in my early 20s, I had this guy who was very influential in my life. He was a pastor, and I worked under him. And his name was George. And George must have noticed something in me that was a little unhealthy in this area, because I bet it was hundreds of times over the course of the 4 years I worked for him, he would say this, Nate, I think it's time for you to lay down your rights. What do you mean lay down my rights? I am a red-blooded American. I know my rights. I have the right to be heard. I have the right to be happy. I have the right to be right. What do you mean lay down my rights? And he'd just look at me. And I think, you want me to deny myself of my rights? But that is a fundamental element. Jesus says, if you want to be my disciple, I take my rights and I lay them down. And I say, this is not about me. Here's what it means to deny yourself. It means that you are no longer your own God. See, every human being is very, very interested in God's job description. To be the ultimate, to be the one who decides what's right and wrong. Every human being, something in them goes like, oh yeah, I could do that. I'll decide what's right and wrong. I like that. I do a great job. Go all the way back to Genesis chapter 3. Very beginning of the Bible. What happens to the first human beings? They're given everything. God creates this beautiful, beautiful world. He says, and there's just one thing. There's one thing. Can you imagine a world where there's one thing that's prohibited? Just one. How many things are prohibited in our world? On your drive here, you had speed limits. It just goes on and on and on. God says, here's the one thing that's off limits. See that tree? That tree, that's the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. Meaning, that's where you choose to decide what's right and wrong. Where you lose your innocence and you put yourself in the place of deciding who is right and who is wrong. And human beings just couldn't let it go. And so they take the fruit, they decide what's good and evil, we'll be our own gods, we'll determine what's right and wrong, we'll determine what's valuable and what's not valuable. And then the story of the Bible is us trying to recover from that. So here's what Jesus says a disciple does. Is I take the fruit from the knowledge, the tree of knowledge of good and evil, what's right and wrong, and I put it back on the tree. And rather than pick it every day and say, I'll be God, I'll determine what's right and wrong, Jesus says, here's what my disciples do. They deny themselves. They say, no. God, I'll let you determine what is right and what is wrong. I will let you be God, and I will be the follower. You lead, not me. If anyone wants to be my disciple, they must deny themselves. Because we're experts at self-preservation and self-promotion. And Jesus says, my followers deny themselves. And then he moves into this. They must take up their cross daily. Take up their cross daily. Now, we know what happens after this point. This is Luke chapter 9, later in the book of Luke, the cross, and Jesus will go to the cross. But you've got to remember, the people who are hearing this, they don't know that Jesus is going on a cross. That's not part of the story yet. When Jesus looked at them and said, here's what, if you want to be my disciple, you have to deny yourself, take up your cross daily. What would have happened in their minds? Who died on crosses? Criminals. It was Rome's highly developed form of execution. It was part of what kept their empire intact for so many years. They actually borrowed the concept from the ancient Babylonian Empire. And the cross was designed to do two things. Two things. It was designed to humiliate, and it was designed to give such excessive pain over a long period of time that nobody could figure out a way to even make someone hurt more for longer. Right? That's what the cross did. This is how Rome executed people. They put a cross on somebody's back. This happens to Jesus. They'd march them through the streets. People would mock them. They'd always execute people on a road outside of a city. So there was as much public exposure as possible. You'd be put up on the cross, and above your head was always put your crime. It defined you. It was humiliating. Your parents had to come and watch you. And above your head, it said, you were a murderer, you were a thief, you were a liar, whatever it was. And then over a period of sometimes up to 4 days, you would slowly and agonizingly die. And people, the screams of people being crucified would just intimidate people. Don't mess with Rome. Because if Rome does that, unthinkable things could happen. So Jesus looks at his disciples. He hasn't been to a cross. He says, if you want to be my disciple, my follower, first, I want you to deny yourself. And secondly, I want you to pick up your cross. In today's lingo, it'd be something like this. Jesus says, I want you every day to pick up an electric chair. What? What are you talking about? We haven't done anything wrong. We're not criminals. Jesus is pointing them to this radical concept that here's what my disciples do. They pick up the things that are terribly uncomfortable and they live sacrificially. Rather than demanding their rights and their right, he says, here's what my disciples do. They pick up their cross voluntarily and they do it how often? This is terrible. Daily. Jesus is suggesting this, that every day you get out of bed and you decide, today I'm going to deny myself, I'm going to be a follower of Jesus, and I'm going to pick up my cross. What's your cross? The cross might be, today I'm choosing to forgive someone who's offended me. I'm choosing the way of life that Jesus set out, and man, that gives me splinters in my back. Today, I'm choosing to be a person who honors and loves others, because this was a major theme of Jesus's communication, is that we loved and valued other people, and sometimes that's really uncomfortable, but I'll pick up that cross. Today, I choose to follow the way of Jesus where he cared for those who were in desperate situations. Today, I pick up the cross. I'm not picking up my personal agenda. I can't pick up my hopes and dreams for the future. I pick up the Jesus way, the sacrificial way, and I do it how often? Oh, every day. How would you have felt if you're one of the disciples? You were just dreaming about conquering the world, and you're going to be in on the 12 guys that are helping the new Messiah conquer the world. And he says, oh no, actually, you want to be my disciple? You're going to deny yourself, and you're going to pick up a cross every single day of your life. And then, he says, you want to be my disciple? You'll follow me. You'll follow me. I love that it's not just wandering pain. Pick up a cross and just wander. No, he says, here's why you do this. It's because you're going the way that I'm going. You're pursuing me. This is where I'm headed. I'm headed to a radical reorientation of life. This is subversive. This isn't changing the world that the way you thought the world would be changed through armies and force and political influence. He says, you're going to change the world the way I changed the world. We're going to practice self-denial. We're going to practice putting other people first. You pick up that cross, and what are you looking at? You're not looking at your pain. You're not looking at your suffering. You're looking at your Savior who's walking ahead of you. He'll never ask you to do something that he hasn't done himself. Follow me, he says. There's a challenge that some of us pick up the cross without following. And that's just plain old suffering. And some of us follow without picking up the cross. And that's really emptiness. Jesus, pick up your cross daily and follow him. You follow him to life, true life, to resurrection. Now, okay, all of this, it's kind of quiet in the room. This is not the sermon that you're going to hear on TV, right? Because like, what? Here's why it's all okay. It's because of resurrection. Like, this isn't the end. So we'll move into that. Let's just move on to this. I just have some principles for disciples from this passage of scripture, the principles of being a disciple. Number one, I think this is so important, especially for people that live in the culture that we live in. There will always be a temptation to ask Jesus to follow me, okay? To ask Jesus to follow me. Jesus says to us, you follow me, and here's what we're told, here's what we tend to do, is we tend to say, hey, you know what? I like this idea of Jesus. I like the idea that I could be forgiven of my sins. I like the idea that God came to earth and bridged the gap. And I have an agenda for my life. I have hopes and dreams. That's something that we applaud in our culture. What are your dreams? What are your hopes? What are your goals? And here's what we often do. We often say, I'm headed this way. Hey, Jesus, I think you could be in a huge benefit to my life. I want you to follow me. And so here I am. I'm trying to do the next deal. I'm trying to reach the next goal. I'm trying to accomplish the next thing. And I say, hey, Jesus, stay close. I'm going to need you in just a second. Because this one is a big challenge. And I think I'm going to need you to come in and help me get over the hurdle. So Jesus, follow me. Who's leading my life? I am, right? I'm making the decisions. I'm calling the shots. This is a challenge for everyone who's a believer in Jesus. This is a challenge that I face every day of my life, that oftentimes, rather than doing what Jesus just asked me to do, to deny myself, pick up my cross daily and follow him, I say, oh, Lord, I love you. You're fantastic. Follow me. Here's what we're going to do today. Jesus is asking his disciples to pause, to stop, to lay down rights, to lay down agenda, and say, where are you going, Jesus? You lead. I follow. I'll put the fruit back on the tree. And I want to get this right. I want to get this right. I am the disciple. You are the teacher, the rabbi. There will always be a temptation to ask Jesus to follow me. Second principle, we're invited to take up a cross, not a cause, okay? I won't say too much about this, but I've seen a tendency in our lives that sometimes we take up a cause, something that we're very passionate about. We take it up and we say, this is so important. It could be a political agenda. It could be something having to do with humanitarian efforts and rights. All of these things is usually a good, important thing. And we take up the cause rather than take up the cross. And when I take up a cause over a cross, I've got things just a little bit backwards, and here's what I'll end up. I'll end up fatigued and tired and angry at everyone else who doesn't have the same cause. You've never met a follower of Jesus who's fatigued and tired and angry at other followers of Jesus, have you? No, this never happens. I am called to take up a cross, not a cause. Here's the third principle of being a disciple. In life, we choose between significant living and easy living. I really think this is what Jesus is asking them. Listen, you can live your life any way you want. I get that. Why are we talking about sacrifice? Because sacrifice is significant living. It's living that changes something. So last weekend, my family wasn't here. We went to visit Jenny's grandmother and her parents who raised her. And they're in Arizona. And I'll tell you, it was fairly nice. It was only like 62 there. And people in Arizona had big jackets on. And we were walking around in shorts. My boys were with me. They had no shirts on. Everybody was like, what are you doing? So here's the interesting thing, though, is that her grandmother, who's 94, lives in this retirement center. And like, it's a really nice retirement center. And I was not excited about this vacation. I was excited that my wife bought Allegiant tickets for $95 round trip. I liked that. And so we were just down there for 4 days. And Jenny said, hey, we'll be staying in Grandma Jane's retirement center. And I was like, what? I don't want to stay in a retirement center. She's like, trust me, you'll like it. She's been before. And so we get to this retirement center, and it's, you know, she's got a spare bedroom, and my teenagers are the only teenagers in this place, and I feel like a young man. And I played, literally, I played like well over 3 dozen games of pickleball. I went 0-17 against my wife. I could not beat her. I'm like, come on, let's try again. Closest I ever got, you played 11. I lost 5-11 one time. That's the closest I ever got. I played a lot of shuffleboard and some bocce ball. And it was really fun. I was not looking forward to this at all, but it was so fun. There's like an outdoor pool and an indoor pool, and nobody used anything except for us. I'm not sure why. Like, so we were like headed back to the airport, and Jenny goes, I'm kind of looking forward to retirement. And I'm like, me too. Now, I don't think I could afford to live at that retirement center, but 4 days of just like, you know, play some more pickleball. I think I can beat you this time. Or like, I was pretty good at shuffleboard. Like, it was really easy. There was no agenda. There was no schedule. It was enjoyable. Do I choose an easy life or a significant life? See, in significant living, it won't always be easy, but things change. Jesus came to change the world. And when he says, pick up your cross, I'm going to pick up something called missional living. I'm going to pick up his agenda for the world, not just my ease of life, not just my personal enjoyment. Discipleship is this question. Will I choose the path of least resistance, which will be more enjoyable in the short run? Or will I choose significant living, joining Jesus in a mission to change the fundamental issues of this planet? And then lastly, this principle of discipleship, we have to come back to this idea of resurrection. Remember, there is resurrection. Part of what Jesus says is he talks about what's going to happen to him, his own death. I'll be rejected by the religious establishment, and I'll be killed, but I'll be resurrected. I'll be resurrected. Listen, the only thing in my mind, this is, okay, do I really want to be a disciple of Jesus? Jesus just defined it as you deny yourself, take up your cross daily, and follow me. Here's what makes it all worth it. Resurrection. This isn't the end. Even if I spent my life with some splinters in my back because I'm carrying Jesus' cross, his agenda, his hope for the world, this life, whatever discomfort I face, is temporary. If there was a line and this was eternity, this life is just a scratch, just a little tiny scratch in the chasm of eternity. I've mentioned this before, but there is nothing more honoring than doing a funeral service for a disciple of Jesus. Because here's what I know. I don't know everything about when things are going to happen after this life, but I do know this, that we treat death as the end of someone's life. It's the end of the book. We just finished, and now their life is over. We close the book. This is what I understand from the Bible for a disciple of Jesus. When you take your last breath physically, that's the end of chapter one. Because you were made to be eternal, that you will be resurrected. Paul introduced this crazy concept. 1 Thessalonians in the book of Corinthians, he says this. He says that the disciple of Jesus will be bodily resurrected. No matter how challenging and significant your life has been following Jesus, that one day, and this is the order of it. I love this. Study it. He says, one day when Jesus returns in his undiminished glory, he comes back the second time, and this time he'll meet all of the disciples' expectations. When he comes back, guess what's going to happen? It says the dead who are in Christ will be resurrected, their bodies first. Some of us are saying, well, what about people who have been dead for 500 years? Aren't they now currently in earthworms all over the world? I don't know, but somehow, man, Merville, he's going to come back together, and I'm going to watch him go like, oh, there goes Merville. Whoa. And then those who are left will join him as he returns back to this planet. See, this isn't just a call. Jesus isn't calling people like, hey, come and ruin your life and have a miserable experience. No, no, no. This is significance. This is ultimate, meaningful living. With this hope that one day, all of my original expectations for who this Messiah would be are fulfilled. But the way to get there is to deny myself, take up a cross every day, and follow him. Will you pray with me? Jesus, we don't just want to be adherents. We hear these challenging calls of discipleship, and something moves in our heart. The challenge beckons us. We want to step up to the plate. We want to choose the significant way of living, not the easy way of living. Lord, teach us how to put the fruit back on the tree, to deny ourselves, to pick up the cross, the things that are important to you, we choose to carry and to follow you. And in the process of following, there's transformation. There's this ongoing hope of resurrection, of renewal, that the planet and our lives will finally one day be made new. We follow. We're not afraid. There's one more thing. At the very beginning, we looked at these two questions that Jesus asked. Who do people say that I am? And then even more importantly, who do you say that I am? Who do you? It's a personal question. The most important question every human being must address. And for some of us today, Jesus is asking you that question. You feel it. You sense it. He's moving your heart. God's Spirit is challenging you. And he's saying this. Who do you say that I am? Not who did your mom, who did your grandma, who does the pastor? No, no. Who do you say that I am? And for some of us, it's our moment, just like it was Peter's moment, to make a radical, life-altering statement. Jesus, I believe that you are the Christ. You are the Son of the living God. You are the hope of the world. You are the one who saves me. You are the solution to everything that's broken. If that's you, and right now is your moment to say, yes, I declare you are the Christ, the Son of the living God. You just boldly do this. Raise your hand and wave at me. Nay, I'm making that decision right now. Anybody? Yes. Yes, ma'am. Here's daughter right there. Absolutely. And yes, in the back, I see you. Yeah, right there. I love it. Anybody in the balcony, if that's you, please wave at me. Yes. And yes. Both sons and daughters of God. Yeah, I see you. Beautiful. Big, bold statement. Yeah. You're the Christ, the Son of the living God. Amen. Hey, everybody, there are a bunch of people that just raised their hands. This is cause for celebration. Would you just pass on our joy? I love it. I love it. I love it. If you did raise your hand, this is a really big moment for you, okay? And I want to get a Bible in your hands to help you get started. Head to one of these I Have Decided banners, and we'll help you get going on the journey. Everybody else, be a disciple of Jesus. Be his hands, his feet, and his mouthpiece. God bless you. You are loved.